It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
The best 60 minutes of your day, the Wednesday Homer Hour. That would mean that it starts with Rain Man, 1-800-990-3776. 1-800-990-3776. Caller number 5. You have a chance to win the ESPN prize pack. Actually, to give it to you accurately, you win it even if you stink. By that, I mean if you get nothing wrong, nothing right. But you do have to, there is some pressure in that regard because there are millions listening. You have the YouTube and then you have the Twitter, and then we put the highlights on, and so the world will be able to observe just how bad you are if you are bad. The Miz did not pitch today, because that's rule one with the Brewers. The Brewers did win. Their record is now at 64-38. They have a 6.5 game division lead, and they're right up there as far as the record right now is identical to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Now we have the Brewers have hit a different level, by the way. Again, 1-800-990-3776, 1-800-990-3776, Rain Man, brought to you by Saganiac Planning, a name synonymous with employee benefits, top-notch service, and doing it well locally for over 50 years. I'm not even there yet. I'm currently at 46. And that means is I'll never catch him. 1-800-990-3776 is no longer necessary because we have a contestant. And then Jason Wilde is on assignment. Dario Melendez will be filling in, or he'll be on today. Jason Wilde on assignment. It's just like Miz. Well, where is Jason? Don't know, don't care. So when he is on tomorrow, generally with Brian Bulaga, is he going to be on assignment again tomorrow? I don't know. You'll find out at 5 o'clock. There is no need to help out and assist with old-fashioned roofing on whether the roof is open or closed, because the game has already been played. The Brewers won. Miz didn't pitch. And the results of the Brewers has now hit a third level. The most important thing is the Miz pitching. And the second most important thing is what are the Brewers going to do as far as improving the team? What must be understood is what the Brewers think about the team, not just this year, but next year and the following year with their pitching. If they believe their young pitching is good enough that they'll be even better next year, then there would be no need to make huge changes this year and give up, because it's not like it's this year or bust. If they believe your young pitching is good and only going to get better, then you might make some addition like they did, but you're not going to go crazy now, because why give up all that talent when your young pitching is going to be even better next year? You would only do something crazy if you felt this was your last chance. And I'm assuming they don't believe that based on the assessment or scouting of the pitchers they have. If they don't do anything big, that tells you how much they believe in the near future of their young pitching and their everyday players. But it's all about the young pitching, because they know that when the pitchers get old, even if they're the greatest in the world, they're not going to keep them because it gets too expensive. So their pitching is based totally on how strong is the young pitching and how much longer are they going to be here. If you think we'd like to do it this year, but we'll be even better next year, maybe better the year after that, then there's a limit to how much we're going to give up to get that veteran pitcher this year. We might do it still, but this isn't, and I don't know the answer to that. The actions of the Brewers will tell us. The actions will tell us how confident they are in their young pitching in the immediate future. Because if they have confidence, they're not going to do anything crazy. They may have done all that they've done. And that might disappoint you, but if you believe that they know what they're doing, then you shouldn't be that disappointed. And that will also factor in, I haven't done enough study, as to the availability of players. They would want a pitcher only for the rest of the season. That would be this year for the end of this season. Detroit pitcher has been talked about. But for next year, they may have looked and said they're like five different pitchers. Well, that means we wouldn't have to pay as much because they're more available. And we might be comfortable that by this time next year, we don't even want a veteran pitcher. Our young pitchers have gotten so good. So, Brewers' biggest thing is Miz pitching. Two, what are they going to do as far as improving the team? And three, did they win the game? Because with the cushion they have, I don't think there's a worry about them making the playoffs. All right, it's time for Rain Man. Matt in New Berlin, you're on 94.5 ESPN. Rain Man is brought to you by, of course, 94.5 ESPN, because we give you the prize pack. If anybody's won that prize pack and they want to comment on it, let me know. You can call in as well. I have no idea what it is. And then also Saganiac Planning, a name synonymous with employee benefits, top-notch service, and doing it well for over 50 years. A phone number you can remember. All you can remember is 783-262-783. Roger Maris, 6161. It's just too bad that the Miz wasn't the 61st pick, because then I could say 262-783, Miz, but I can't, because it was not 61. Matt, good evening. You're on 94.5 ESPN. Your Rain Man resume, please.
Listen often, never participated, excited about the opportunity.
Yeah, well, if you listen often, you know how it works. You know, the first question is the Saganiac Planning Marquette trivia question, because they've been such a great supporter of Marquette. Have you listened to Rain Man recently?
Yes.
Okay, then you have a general idea of the way Rain Man has been leaning in the recent past. You know what
I mean, sir,
by that?
I do, and I feel confident until I'm on the phone. Now my heart's beating fast for some reason, like we're in person, and that shouldn't be.
Yeah, no. I would say, it's not that important. But the first question, the Saganiac Planning Marquette trivia question. You ready to go, Matt?
Yes, sir.
3, 2, 1, go. Dwayne Wade and Marquette in the Final Four. What team won the national title that season?
North Carolina.
Incorrect. With what pick was the Miz taken in the 2022 baseball draft?
63.
Correct. What Brewer was a greater athlete at Cal Berkeley than Aaron Rodgers?
Pass.
The Miz record this season?
Oh, 9-2.
Incorrect. Miz ERA this season, 1.57 or
2.57? 1.57.
Correct. Miz, 115 innings. How many strikeouts? 173 or 193?
193.
Incorrect. How old is the Miz?
24.
Correct. National League, where does the Miz rank in ERA for pitchers?
Number one.
Correct. National League, where does the Miz rank in complete games?
Three.
Incorrect. National League, hits per nine innings, where does the Miz rank in the National League?
Number one.
Correct. National League, home runs given up per nine innings, where does the Miz rank?
Number one.
Incorrect. Nice try, though. National League, innings pitched, where does the Miz rank?
Fourth.
Incorrect. National League, adjusted ERA, as I call it, ERA plus, where does the Miz rank?
One.
Correct. Where did the Miz play college baseball?
Crowder University.
Crowder College, but I believe that's correct. You'd get an
A.
No, that's right. Good enough. That's good enough. The Miz's fastest pitch.
105.5.
That is correct. And again, what Brewer was a greater athlete at Cal Berkeley than Aaron Rodgers? You got as much time as you want, because there it is. Well, I'll let you take. Do you have an answer or no?
Greg Vaughn.
Greg Vaughn is incorrect, because he no longer plays for the Brewers. But he does hold a record for the greatest auction performance ever. 10 items. He bought 9 of them. I've never been equaled, 90%. It is Andrew Vaughn, but not Greg Vaughn. Andrew Vaughn was College Baseball Player of the Year at Cal Berkeley. And, of course, Aaron Rodgers never won the Heisman. So Andrew Vaughn, a greater athlete at Cal Berkeley than Aaron Rodgers. And if you ever see Aaron Rodgers, feel free to tell him that. It's too bad you weren't as successful in college as Andrew Vaughn.
I did meet him once at a Killers concert.
Who, Andrew?
I did meet Aaron Rodgers once at a
At a what concert?
Mark Dauscher, the Killers at the Rave.
The Killers.
And this was before he had his breakout. Yep. And I was afraid to meet him because I was like, man, what if he doesn't shake my hand? What if he's not a nice guy? This is going to ruin my fandom. But in that moment, he was a good dude.
Just so you
hand.
Know, I was at the Rave. This was many years ago. And only one person recognizes me, and they came up and said, what the hell are you doing here? What do you mean? You don't even know who this guy is. The entertainer was a guitar player, Kenny Wayne Shepherd. And my son was a very, very good, very interested guitar player. And he said, Dad, Kenny Wayne Shepherd's there. I want to go. I'm like, okay. I don't know. He might have been 15, 16. So I had never heard Kenny Wayne Shepherd, but I wished to stay. He was incredibly good. So there you have it. I've been there. And have I been there since? You want to make that? Here's the extra Rain Man question. Has Homer been to the Rave since he saw Kenny Wayne Shepherd 20 years ago?
No.
No is a correct answer.
No, he is not.
Though, I do want to say, I went by there like last week, and it had to be the biggest audience I'd ever seen. People were waiting like around the block and another block. And so I don't even know who was performing, but it was the greatest audience or people waiting outside that I'd ever seen. And they do have very good music there, right? I mean, people, is it still called the Rave or does it have another name now? I don't know what it is. But anyway, all right. One,
two,
three.
I've been there probably since the Killers.
Four, five, six, seven, eight. Was eight right or nine?
Yeah, I got eight.
All right, here we go. Let's help out Matt. Dwayne Wade and Marquette in the Final Four. What team won the national title that season?
Was it Duke?
It was Syracuse. Oh. Marquette lost to Kansas. This is how great Carmelo Anthony was as a player. He was good enough to get Jim Boeheim a national title. Other than that, the Miz was picked number 63.
That's an important one.
Rutt Brewer was a greater athlete at Cal Berkeley than Aaron Rodgers. It was Andrew Vaughn. He was also, I believe, the third player taken in the baseball draft. Unlike 63 for the Miz, telling you which player they thought would be better in the majors. The Miz's record is 10-4. The Miz's ERA this season, the choices were 1.57 and 2.57. 1.57 is correct. You got that right. Miz, 115 innings. How many strikeouts? 173 or 193? The correct answer is 173. Think of 193. That would be like two an inning. He's good, but not that good. So that was incorrect. How old is the Miz? 24. You nailed it. And here's where I went stronger in the Miz, because it's incredible how dominant it is. Where is the Miz in the National League in ERA? First. Where is the Miz in complete games in the National League? First. Hits per nine inning National League. Where does the Miz rank? First. National League adjusted ERA, ERA plus. Where does the Miz rank? First. And arguably, for over 115 innings as starter, it might be in the last 60, 70 years, the third best ever behind Pedro Martinez. And Greg Maddux was like at 271. So you can't overstate. So those were all first. Now I had to throw in some that weren't first to just, so you didn't get them all right, Matt. National League, home runs given up per nine innings. Where does he rank? He's fourth. Every time he gives up a home run, you're surprised, but he gives up very few home runs. National League innings pitched, where does he rank? He's ninth, which should surprise you because they pull him out so often. Like, see, why are they taking him out so early? He's ninth in the National League in innings pitched, so they're not taking him out that often. Yes, he went to Crowder College. Those at Marquette prefer that you refer to it as J. Crowder College, though that's not accurate. And his fastest pitch is still 105.5. And have not done a follow-up, somebody else can, on Ben Bruss' concern about the Miz. His pitching was dropped down as he continued inning by inning. Tim Van Voren, Fox 6 Sports, did not seem to be too bothered by it. And, you know, said it just, they didn't give any indication, the staff either, Murphy or anybody that that was a thought. It was more like he hadn't pitched that much, so maybe he wore it a little bit. But it should be watched. Am I worried? No, but it should be watched. So, Matt, we have you down for 8. How do you grade yourself?
B plus.
All right. You will get the ESPN prize package, and I don't know. Do they have to come pick that up, or do we deliver it?
I never got the answer.
I'm guessing you probably got to pick it up, but we should be able to tell them how soon it's available. So work on that, C-Cat, to when we can tell them how quickly they can come by and get it. 8, and you get a bonus point for getting 63 right. And if you get it wrong, you lose 5 points.
Wow.
Because that also, if you want to be specific, means that he was also taken in the second round. Hard to be able to judge talent baseball. The Miz, 63rd player taken in the 2022 baseball draft. All right, Matt, I'll give you a B+. It was a B, and then you got the one right with 63, so that makes it a B+. Thanks for playing. I don't know. Somebody will tell me how soon you can do it again. If you win, is it 4 weeks, 8, 10 years, whatever? What, do we know what the rules are? How often you can win prizes?
I don't have that answer.
Yes. Now you got a couple things to work on.
Yes. That'll be in the email.
It's all on ESPN contest rules or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the site is. It doesn't matter because I'm not going to look at it anyway. 1-800-990-3776. Write that down for future attempts at Rain Man. Fisco Auto Body, it's a family business owned since 1931. It's not what they do, it's who they are. And they still own the business. So that means the Fiscos are still fixing your cars. Imagine how many years they've been doing it before they ever get to yours. Pretty easy explanation for one of the reasons why they're so good. Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin. Don't give the address often enough. On Forest Home in Franklin, when they're that good, they can say expert workmanship guaranteed for the life of your vehicle. Any damage, Fisco has you covered. Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin. Here's how it works. If you haven't listened before, you go there and you'll be impressed. Everybody is, and you'll thank them. And then at some point you go, wow, I guess I need to thank Homer. I know it's coming. Fisco, 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 to remember the name. Dario Melendez, he is not next. He's soon. Jason Wilde on assignment. I am next. The best 60 minutes in your day, the Wednesday Homer Hour at a great Rain Man. Is it possible to have 15 questions all about The Miz? It is not, because the first question is a Marquette. If I can find some way to connect Marquette and Miz, yes, there will be one day, and when it's all 15 about The Miz. The Discount Liquor Twitter poll question. Again, Jason Wood is on assignment. Dario Melendez, the sports anchor at Channel 12. I don't know how they call it. Sports director. I'm not sure what the official titles are now. He's going to be on at 5:30. I do want to have Discount Liquor Twitter poll question. C-Cat, you can help out. Which of these, or who would you like to have an autograph from the most? The Miz and Jordan Love are two of the choices. And I don't know, should I put Giannis up there? I mean, he's dead to me, but it doesn't mean that he's dead to other people. The autograph you would like the most, The Miz, Giannis, Jordan Love.
Micah Parsons?
Excellent choice. Yes, Micah Parsons. Those are the four. There's nobody else on the Brewers, really. Maybe.
Well, Yelich.
I don't. It'd be rude to him. He doesn't want to get 2%. With the Miz, there's that Miz. All right, Bucks.
Tyler Hero.
Who'd you rather have? We'll save that for tomorrow. Whose autograph would you rather have, Tyler Hero or Christian Yelich?
Okay.
I don't know. Neither. That'd be a third choice, but that's rude. I don't mean to be rude. All right. The autograph you would like the most. Choices: The Miz, Giannis, Jordan Love, or Micah Parsons. I messed up, and I thought I purchased the Micah Parsons jersey that I was going to use at an auction, and it turns out that I gave them a credit card that didn't work. I don't think I had spent too much on the credit card, and I didn't realize they said you have to your credit card didn't work. I didn't notice it, and then it was too late. And so I sent, well, can what happened? And they go, well, you didn't do it. So we gave it to some of the doctors somewhere, and I thought, man, I messed that up. So I have to, or I will make a contribution the same. I feel like they're expected a certain amount of money. They got nothing. So which shared it was doesn't really matter. But my choice, The Miz, Giannis, Jordan Love, or Micah Parsons. Well, we know one that it's not, and I'm down to The Miz, Jordan Love, and Micah Parsons. Right now, The Miz is hot, but pitchers get hurt. I think it would either be Jordan Love or Micah Parsons. Now, right now, it's Jordan Love, but I think over time, Micah Parsons is going into the Hall of Fame. Lock. He's already there, might be already. And maybe the people in Dallas would like him, but I don't. Maybe they feel differently about him because they never won anything with him. And then he left. So,
are you a big autograph guy?
Yes and no. Usually I get them and then do them at auction. The only autograph I regret is Jeff Sports, where I go. They had a picture of Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain. And that's the amazing thing about Russell. He was like 4 inches shorter, maybe even more. And yet they show him his hand being dead even to Wilt Chamberlain, who's getting rid of the ball in some kind of a hook shot. And it was signed by both. By both. And I didn't get it. I come back, and then I said, yeah, I really want that. I come back the next day, it's gone. Now, for those of you who don't know, I am, and don't mean to be rude, one of the greatest parts about it is they're both dead, and they're not going to sign again. But Bill Russell, and I've said, if you ever get anything else, he's never gotten anything since. So that's the one regret I have. I've already told you the fact my dad got me a baseball when I was young, signed by Stan Musial. I didn't know who he was. He was just a little before, and I paid catch that next day, and then told my friend, and they go, you're an idiot. What? Stan Musial's one of the greatest players ever. I never heard of him. So baseball was ruined, and so be it. But I don't think it's worth that much. Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell, a picture of the two of them signed by both. Oh, baby! That's you know it's special when you say, I don't want to give it up. There's a story in here about a Yankee person. It was David Wells. This is so good. I don't know if it's true. Somebody should check. Then we'll get to sugar-free. Then a break. David Wells paid a $2,500 fine for wearing Babe Ruth's game-worn Yankee baseball cap. He had bought the cap for $35,000. Asked to wear it in a game, was told no. Why? God only knows. He did it anyway. He paid the fine in singles. In singles. That would be 2,500 singles. I got that right. Then sold the hat 13 years later for $535,000. David Wells, smart man.
So you said the fine was how much?
$2,500.
Okay, so he paid $35 for the hat.
Yeah, we're at $37,500, and he got $535. And I guarantee you, this was a while back. If he had waited till now, it'd probably be $1 million. Though you wonder, do I want it if it was worn by David Wells?
I was going to say, is it devalued or increased in value because of that story?
I would say it has no impact because, to be fair, I have no idea who wore it before David Wells did. You know, so that would add a little extra pizzazz, but I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you prove that Babe Ruth wore it, but someone can look up to see if that story is accurate. Dario Melendez, next. The Wednesday Homer, we already did Rain Man. More and more questions about Miz, and we will get to Dario Melendez, but I was short to get to Sugar Free before the break. Sugar Free, you're on 94.5 ESPN.
Yeah, get Giannis off that list and put Cheerio on there.
Oh, Cheerio. All right. I think that's legitimate. Thanks for the call. All right, we can adjust that, right? CK, you can delete the first one.
Yeah.
I don't think we had necessarily votes. Yeah, I would agree. The Miz, Cheerio, Jordan Love, and Micah Parsons. Yeah, two from each team.
Consider it done.
All right, joining us now is the sports director. I think that's his official title. Dario Melendez at Channel 12. Dario, is that your title?
That is. What's the list I just missed? Oh, what are we taking Giannis off of?
No, hold on. The autograph you would like the most. Okay, it was the Miz. The problem with Giannis is I've declared that he's dead to me, not because it's Giannis, but when the player leaves and doesn't have any effect on the current the Bucks team. Then, so it was the Miz, Giannis, Jordan Love, or Micah Parsons. Which would you pick? And I said, it's really close to me. I would probably pick Jordan Love, though I think the Micah Parsons would probably end up being worth the most because he's certainly in the Hall of Fame. And the person just said, get rid of Giannis, put in Jackson Chirio. And that's a good point because then you'd have four current players. Would you like to make your vote?
Well, I'm a huge autograph hound. I love memorabilia. Jordan Love has a fun, cool autograph.
He does.
So that, like, he does a J with the heart. I don't know. Have you ever seen Giannis's autograph?
Yes.
It is horrible.
Yeah, that's being nice.
It's not really even an autograph. It's kind of like, so he has like levels. He has the $1,500 autograph, the $800, and the free. And he pretty much assigns his free autograph all the time. And it's pretty much like a swoop and a line.
What's the $1,500?
The weirdest thing ever. He kind of spells out his name. Oh. Like, so you kind of see it on his signature chew. Because again, he has a long name, so it should be a nice autograph. And it doesn't look good.
See, I would just have a G, a huge G, and then a straight line, or 34 and circle or something.
It's not even like that.
It's impossible to believe that it's actually the autograph, but they now have that hologram that you can supposedly make sure that you know he did it or someone.
And it's Luke Ritenour's fault. You know that?
Okay, I'm listening. I didn't know it was
So they obviously have all of these team signings. So during Giannis' like rookie or sophomore year when Ritenour's on the team, Giannis is doing all these signings and things for charities or whatever, and he's taking his time, signing out his full name. Ritenour comes in, and he's done within 2 minutes. And Giannis didn't understand what happened, and he's like, look, bro, all you have to do is do your initials, do a scribble, and you can be out of here. And he looked over at the handler. He's like, that's all you have to do? He goes, yeah. So Luke Ritenour ruined Giannis's autograph.
I think it was moving in that direction, but I mean, you could be right as far as the Bucks because the last time I interviewed Aaron Rodgers, it was in studio, and I saw his autograph, and it was just a big A, and then I said, look it. Come on.
Yeah.
You can do better than that. And I threw him a baseball signed by Jim Gantner, and if you've ever seen Jim Gantner's signature.
Oh, my God, Gumby. Oh, it's so nice.
I mean, it looks like it was done by a fifth-grade teacher who's specialized in penmanship.
Yep.
And so he looks at it, and as only Aaron Rodgers could do, he looks at it, throws it back, and he says, Homer, Cursiff is dead. Well, I mean, it is kind of dead, but...
It's a lost art. Arnold Palmer had a beautiful autograph, too. Like any of the Raleigh Fingers, all the older players.
Bob Uecker's
autograph.
Spectacular.
Is great. Yep.
And I don't
even
know...
I'm sure that's not what you wanted to talk about.
No, I didn't know. I'm trying to think of the current players in any sport, who still has a good one. It seems like somebody comes to mind, but I can't think of it right now. So,
like I said, I mean, Jay Love's is probably the best, but again, it's just his initials. I can't think of anyone. I guess Braun's not a current player. Yelich has a nice one.
Okay.
Well, he's got a pretty nice signature.
Take anyone. All right, now, with Dari Melendez. Yeah. And so the reason I have you on is because the first issue is everything. It always starts with the Packers. And to me, there's a legitimate debate as to how good they're going to be. Do you believe they were great last year and the injuries just kept them from achieving something and so the team's good? Or that collapse, even with the injuries, shows that the team's lacking a little bit. I think all positions of anywhere between 9 and 8 to 12 and 5 – I may not agree, but I don't have any problem with him. So I'm curious as to your analysis looking at this season for the Packers and if you factor in, as I just kind of did, the end of last season and how good the team could be or should be.
I think the team was good enough to make it to the Super Bowl last year before the Micah Parsons injury.
Okay.
I think they could have won the Super Bowl if it wasn't for Jenkins and Kraft getting injured. If you look at what this team was trending toward, they were in a really good spot. They were clicking on all cylinders on offense because Matt LaFleur figured get the ball to Tucker Kraft as much as possible. They probably should have rested Josh Jacobs and not let him power through. That, I think, hurt them a little bit more. But when Micah Parsons went down, you lost your fourth quarter closer. We saw what he could do in Detroit, getting the two huge sacks on Goff. And then he gets hurt in Denver, and the the Packers could not close out games defensively. Like, Caleb Williams doesn't do what he does in the season finale or wasn't the season finale, toward the end of the season and in the playoff game if Micah Parsons is on the field in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to have a head. He could run around as much as he wants, but he's not completing those passes. He's not going to have time. But that said, Homer, you were around. You saw what the Packers did in 2010-11. They had 15, 16 guys on the injured list, on the IR.
And they proved in 2011 how good they were in 2010 at the end, because it was the end of the year when they got so strong. No, they were just like, you know. And that's what I'm saying. If the team was that good as you see it at the end of last year, then we should see a very good team this year, because there'll be some fewer, or that because they'll prove that they're that good. It was really those injuries. The 2010 team showed in 2011 by kicking everybody's butt for how many weeks, even though they didn't win it, that was an indication that 2010 was literally the start and not a lucky stretch. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, Kyle Orton. Who would have thought Kyle Orton coming to Lambeau would have broke up that? Would they start 10-0 or something like that to the 2011 season? I think the team was really good last year. I'm excited to see what they do this year. I think the departure of Romeo Doubs actually kind of helps a little bit, because now you have a clear-cut one, a clear-cut two, a clear-cut
three.
Who
is the clear-cut one?
Christian Watson.
Okay.
Like,
and who's
the
clear-cut two?
Jaden Reed.
All right.
And then Golden, then Matthew Golden would be three.
All right.
I mean, it's just the problem with Golden is he has all the potential to be that number two. An NFL playbook is nuts. Like, it was leaked a couple years ago, and it might be two old encyclopedias put together, the Packers playbook. It's just absolutely massive. And I don't think Matthew Golden really comprehended it. We kind of saw it toward the end of the season, him starting to get a grasp of what the Packers are trying to do. But now that you kind of have this hierarchy with Christian Watson, because look, when he is on the field, Homer, the Packers offense is different. Even when he's running distraction routes, people get open, coverages become so easy to read. Jaden Reed's a really smart slot receiver. And then Matthew Golden has all the ability and talent in the world. It's just learning the playbook. And I would hope in year two, he takes the jump in, it kind of clicks for him.
So here's my question to you, and I have had it for others. I agree with all that. But if you're the coach and you see what's there, in the meetings go, we have to find a way to get him out on the field. He doesn't. I don't care. We have to limit it in whatever way is necessary to get him out on the field because he has too much talent. The entire season, LaFleur never did that once, which makes me believe that whatever they were worried about was so big that they weren't willing to make that adjustment, which we have seen periodically with certain players at any position because their talent was so great even though they were so young. Agree or not?
Agree. And it might be the in-game adjustment.
Okay.
I played receiver at a small D1 that no one's ever heard of called Sacred Heart in Connecticut. And I can tell you right now, we had a huge playbook. And for every route we ran, there was a alternate route versus a certain.
Did you have anybody as a wide receiver who was just so damn good, so sound fast, that even though they didn't know what you, they just say, all right, this is the play, that only play that you run, but we got to put him out there because his hands were that great or whatever.
Sometimes. But the problem is, like, especially when you're running offenses like Matt LaFleur wants to run, which is predicated on getting other guys open, if you mess up and you don't see a coverage switch and you don't switch your route, it messes up the entire scheme.
And I want to say, we're not doing it very often, but we're doing it play much. But and you hear coaches say this, or the assistant coaches, they may not say it publicly, like, dude, this guy's unbelievable.
Well, they tried it with Savion, right? Like, they got him on in certain packages.
Yes, excellent point. They did it a little with him. They never did it once with Golden.
Yeah.
But
I think toward the end, maybe it's the first round, the first round tag that it's like when you get a pitcher, you don't want to, like, ruin their confidence, right? Like, Matthew Golden, he's a first-round guy. You expect him to be a cornerstone of your franchise for a very long time. Maybe it's like, you know what, we're good at receiver right now. We have tons of options. We have all this stuff. Let's baby him. And then next year, because we know we're going to lose Doubs, we throw the book at him a little bit more, and now we're going to show off what Matthew Golden can be. Maybe that's it.
No, that could easily be. I mean, your explanation is better than mine, because that's what happened. And it's not like LaFleur doesn't have that thought that I just gave. Every coach has that. And, when he factored everything in, and you gave some of the, they basically said, Nah, we're just not playing him.
They don't want to ruin his confidence,
right?
Like,
and
especially at that position, right?
Yeah, and now we'll know better this year because he's whatever they were worried about. They're assuming he's going to be better based on the moves they made, and with anybody, you know, you get. All right, that's what we did. This isn't the first year anymore. But again, I'll go by how they use him, not what they say.
Correct. And look, I'm excited to see what they do with him. I mean, with Watson taking the top off and Reed being your intermediate over the middle route, Golden's free to be the athletic receiver. He's free to kind of
right.
not take a one-on-one with a linebacker, take a one-on-one with a nickel corner, and kind of just abuse him, which is what you kind of saw at Texas. And I think Savion could be really good too. The Packers have weapons for days, and that's not even mentioning Tucker Kraft, who's ahead of schedule. Like, the Packers have a really good team. Offensive line's always going to be the question because you have to be able to protect 10, right? And you have to be able to open up lanes for Josh Jacobs, which
yeah,
is something
and that's what I wanted to get to.
Well,
and you alluded to it, yeah. But like late in the games, you can't finish games.
Yeah.
And I'll be Brian Bulaga. Yeah, you know, want to know why? Because you can't run the damn ball late in games.
100%.
If you can run the ball, that's how you finish games. And as good as people have seen Packer teams with Aaron Rodgers or with Brett Favre, when they got ahead, they could run the ball. And if you run it as poorly as they did, you're going to always suck at finishing games. And I don't know that LaFleur has said that often enough, but I mean, Brian Bulaga does, and that's
if
what you do.
If you remember last year, Homer, they were out of the gun a lot more. Josh Jacobs likes taking the ball out of the gun. He's been pretty vocal about that. The year before, when they were doing a little bit more play action under center, is when he had his best year, and I can see the Packers going back to that. Well, LaFleur's kind of hinted to that as well. The Packers offense runs best when Jordan Love is under center coming off of play action. It just confuses defenses. It makes the schemes open up a little bit more. I understand Jacobs doesn't like it as much, but he's going to like being able to run the ball and not get hit in the backfield every time. So I think the Packers probably go away from that shotgun read option type of look and get Love under center, allowing these guys to kind of fire off the ball a little bit more. And again, the play action just frees up everybody else. So instead of having seven guys near the line of scrimmage, maybe you only have the four or the true five. I think you're going to see a little bit a better of a running game out of it because Matt LaFleur is going to kind of go back to what he did that made Love better and not just Jacobs better.
Yeah, and I worry probably more about the offensive line being the factor in that in terms
For sure.
of how well you can run the ball late. And I just remember that that takes time off the clock. And the Packers were never that good a running team when they're great teams, especially with Favre. But they did it late in games when they got ahead.
I mean, look, Ryan Grant, James Starks. I mean, these weren't like household names. Eddie Lacy was really good for a couple of years. But they've never had like Cedric Benson was good for two games. They never had like a really crazy good running back. I mean, Aaron Jones was always very good when healthy. But Josh Jacobs is a stellar running back. I just don't think... Like I said, I understand he wants to get the ball from the shotgun. He operates better in the offense when it's under center and play action, just because you can't cheat. Like I think their offense becomes a little too predictable, which we think we saw a couple games where other teams were literally calling out what they're doing because of certain lineups and formations they were doing out of the gun. He's going to benefit a lot more, and I think you see a much better result this year with that play action under center instead of out of the gun.
And on to the Brewers. What do you think they will do? And I've said I think they have a much better chance to win the World Series. They are still a dog, but they are a much smaller dog this year.
Starting pitching bad is what you need. Like I love Byron Buxton. Put him in the outfield somewhere. I mean, you can move Mitchell over to right. You could put him in right. That adds a bat and an all-star caliber outfielder, gold glove caliber outfielder. That would be absolutely amazing.
How much are you willing to give up?
For Buxton, like, look, the Brewers have 9 of the top 100 prospects in all of baseball. So 10% of the best prospects in baseball are in the Brewers system. It's cool to hoard them, but a lot of them are blocked. Like, I would give up a Jet Williams.
Okay.
I was thinking
more of a number. You'd give up 2 for Buxton, or?
I would give up 1 top 100 and then maybe another top.
Okay.
150, like a Fisher. Like, if you get a Buxton, I don't know if you see Fisher anytime soon.
All right, now let's go to pitching.
Scooble's too much. Like, okay. Unless you're giving up Henderson, Amade, and Pena, like, it just doesn't make sense to me. And I don't know if you need a Scooble-type pitcher. Like, I know Flaherty just went on the IL, but, like, a Flaherty, a Waka, a Soriano, like, a good 2A, 2B is all this team needs. Because you already have Mizorowski. If you go Mizorowski, plug in that pitcher that you just traded for, mm-hmm. Harrison and Drohan, who has been sensational, you can move Sproat to the bullpen. You can move Henderson to the bullpen. You can move Gasser to the bullpen. And now you have one of, if not the best bullpens in all of baseball. Or, Homer, you can go the other way. You can go try to get a guy like Mason, and then your bullpen has Ashby, Mason, right. Uribe, McGill, not in any order.
No, I look at it like I agree with everything you're saying, but to me, if I'm the Brewers, it depends on how much I really like our young pitching. If I really like our young pitching, I'm not risking everything on this year because I think those young pitchers are going to even better, so I might give up a little bit.
Because not going to be a next year.
Well, yeah.
That's the problem. Like, I'm making a move now, man. Like,
okay.
By next year,
you're saying you believe there will be a lockout.
A strike. Yeah, I think it's going to be a lockout. The owners seem pretty adamant that they want this.
Well, if you believe that, yes, then you got to be willing to risk a little bit more factoring that in. But I don't know that they think that or.
I don't know. Like they see the I've never seen the owners this adamant. I know now
they're making so much money though.
Yeah,
and the value of their teams is off the charts.
Look, I think a cap and a floor is the way to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, a $300 million cap and a 175 floor.
But if you're the union, you say, all right, Dario, why? Why do I have to do this? We're making a ton of money. And, you know, if the Dodgers win it again, then you could argue that. But like, all right, so you have a dynasty. Fine. Doesn't seem to bother the fans. Everybody's making so much money. And you as owners, the value of your team is going up. So tell me what's wrong. Just tell me why we got to change.
Because it's not for me. It's not fun. Like it's like not a baseball purist, but it's annoying to me to see the Dodgers sign a guy for $600 million and then pay him $1 million annually.
Yeah, right. You're like, right about that. Time do you do the sports on Channel 12? Because you don't know this.
6:30.
Because I'm always late. What?
Six o'clock. So I got like 15-20 minutes.
And then do you do the 10 or not?
Then I got the 10 o'clock, and then And I'm off tomorrow, and we're at the ballpark Friday for that alumni game. That'll be fun.
Oh, yeah. I kind of remember you in a home run derby. You were pretty good. I don't think you get to play in this one. Have you done batting practice and hit one out at AmFam? I could see you being able to do that.
I did that a couple of years ago at a fantasy camp. That was fun.
Oh, okay.
Fantasy camp's a blast. If you never got to do it.
I'm too old.
I highly suggest.
I'd like to do it, but not that badly. Thanks, Dario.
You'd be one of the youngest ones, Homer. Appreciate it.
That's pathetic. I don't know. I mean, it's good. You want at 80? You want to play ball at 80? Nah. Dario Melendez, Sports Director, Channel 12, next. Tune in to Light It Up, the new season of Behind the Bucks podcast on the Bucks Plus Audio Network, presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker, HR and benefits consultant, narrated by Jim Paschke, the oral history of the 2000-2001 Milwaukee Bucks. From the Big Three to a Hall of Fame coach. Man, if Glenn Robinson just makes that baseline shot, they win Game 6. They get screwed in Game 7. I wonder if that's part of it. Who was it that they suspended for a game? Garbage. This is the story about a generational team that brought the city together and brought the Bradley Center to life. From Behind the Bucks on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, the new ESPN Wisconsin app, and wherever you get your podcasts, Behind the Bucks is presented by Gallagher. The analysis is next.